Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I am Summer Brooks, and with me today are Jeffrey and Susan Bridges. They've created a limited series graphic novel called Killswitch, which comes out in October, and the story is right for the times and has a lot to say in a very short span of pages. And, you know, just me being selfish, I want more pages. But Jeffrey, Susan, welcome.
Well, thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you.
All right, so tell us a little bit about Killswitch, because I saw Jeffrey Thorne tweeting it up, and I said, ooh, this looks interesting. And the art caught my eye, and then I read it, and I said, yeah, we have to talk about this. So where did the story come from, and how long has it been in development?
Well, it came from a really weird place. We, several years back, we found this scientific study that had been done by a professor at Cornell. And he was his hypothesis was that memory is perhaps not necessarily linear. That, you know, there's a lot of theories between like astrophysicists that maybe time isn't linear either, but it's sort of a construct of our brains to make sense of the world around us. And so maybe we just kind of invented it. And if time isn't linear, then your memories wouldn't necessarily be either. And so this professor devised this sort of
experiment.
Yes, that's the word. It was an experiment. And what he did was memories, we make our best memories with things that are we have a very strong reaction to. If, you know, you remember the movies you love and you remember the movies you hate, but the ones that you're like, eh, you kind of forget about them. And so what he did was he gathered a random sampling of participants, and he would flash them images on a computer screen and ask them to predict when a pornographic image would pop up, because if you love it or you hate it, you have a pretty strong reaction to it. Most people are not ambivalent about it. And what he found was that there was a greater than 50% chance that people would be able to predict when it would pop up. And so this was just a preliminary study. I think they did like 9 different ones, and they were going to do some more, and we kind of lost track of where the study went after that.
It was just kind of one of those weird, huh?
Right. And so that's what got us thinking. And what if your memory wasn't linear and the memories from your entire life were there if you could access them?
Kind of like deja vu, if deja vu was real. And
well, some people experience it. I do. I know
right.
you don't.
But what I mean is, what if it was actually you remembering something that happened in the future?
Right. If it was an actual memory that you had just had access to for that moment. And then that immediately led us to think, if that was real and there were people who could really do that, what would the society that we live in do to them? How would they treat them? And that's where the entire story came out of, because we couldn't make any other assumption other than that they would be sort of locked up and used as a resource for, you know.
Right. And in Killswitch, like, these people who are called augurs that can remember things that have happened in the future, they are used to predict things like earthquakes or natural disasters, where they could get people out in time to save millions of lives potentially, and yet they're treated horribly.
Right. And so we wanted to explore what that would be, because I mean, there's a really big ethical question there. We feel like if you could save millions of lives, is it worth it for this
what you're doing
drastic minority right. population to lose all of their rights and freedoms? And so that's where the entire story sort of sprang from. We really love like cyberpunk stories and action stories, and we had been wanting to tell one, and we're like, we could really work with that. And so we just made a really far future flung cyberpunk story and dropped this concept into there.
That's really interesting, because I've read other, shall we say, theories on how precognition is actually people remembering the future, and it's like, oh, sort of like Merlin, but without the living backwards thing. Cool. And it seems more fluid than just saying we're remembering our future. And to take that concept and extrapolate it into where people who have a stronger grasp on this, to the point where they can actually do it intentionally and then taking those people and locking them up and forcing them to prevent future disasters is kind of heinous on the surface.
Right.
And
it is, absolutely.
That sort of conundrum is like, well, were they given the choice to do this voluntarily? It's like just reading the first issue, I had so many questions. I'm like, how did they get from discovering what these people are capable of to this point? How did that happen? And that question is probably going to bug me even after this is a limited series, right?
Yes.
Right. Yeah. So it's going to bug me long after the series is over. And I guess that's a good thing because it makes you think about how that can apply to situations we're currently in. And what do you do with that without just curling up in a ball on the floor and crying?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, there's a very specific thing that our main character sort of decides to do about it, which, you know, people can find out when they read the full series. But she takes a very specific stance on it. But the rest of the characters might not as much. And there's definitely some, you know, discussion about what is the right thing to do. Is it right to let all these millions of people die just because this handful of people are going to lose? I mean, it's a really tough question.
Well, right. And it gives the antagonist a really good, solid motivation where it's like, I'm trying to save people's lives here and I'm going to do what it takes for that to happen. So it gives like this perspective where you're like, okay, yeah, I see where he's coming from, but this is still horrible.
Exactly.
Like, and so it's a very conflicted kind of thing.
Yeah. So I don't want to dive too much into spoilers, but the gist of it is that our main protagonist, Major Regula.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right. She is sort of the poster child for turning people in who they discover are augers. And she's going on a PR tour because the augers are being kept on prison comets. So that they're far away from Earth and their people as possible to keep them from being a danger to the, quote, normal people around. And that, I was like, wow, that's just brutal.
Yeah.
And
then with them being far away, it's very easy for them to vilify them or treat them as, you know, they're very scary.
Right, for society to totally misrepresent how they are.
Exactly.
They're very dangerous others you have
them,
to, you know,
yes,
be wary of. And so, I mean, we definitely, I mean, since thinking about what our society would treat people like this as, it definitely has a lot of parallels to a lot of different minority groups and the way they're sort of struggling in our present environs. So
that's right, and minorities being unfairly imprisoned for prison labor and things like that. So lots of modern parallels.
Yeah, I don't think people realize just how powerful it is where you have a segment of society that is kept out of the view, the harsh light of day, the stare of the unblinking eye, and everyone else around them who doesn't have their best interests at heart is crafting a narrative about who and what these people are and what they represent. And there's no way to
That's
fight.
That's exactly it. Yep.
No way to counter that because they don't have a power base to send out an equal and opposite signal.
Right. And so that's sort of what kicks the story off when Major Regula, you know, arrives on the comet and finally sees how they're actually treated and what they're actually like and what's really going on there and what are the ramifications of her discovering this information. And that sort of kicks off the rest of the story. And what is she going to do about it?
So, yeah. So we will leave the story points at that and just say that there's lots of bloodshed and mayhem and questions exist at the end of the miniseries. And I guess for me is, what How long did it take to write these four issues? And did you ever consider maybe making it six or eight to flesh out some of the story?
I think the length was pretty well set from when we started, because it was a sort of a fixed ending that we had. I mean, and so we knew exactly where we were going.
Right.
I mean, there are more stories we could tell in that universe, but with this specific story, we had a very fixed beginning, middle, and end point we wanted to tell. And we wrote the first issue and had it drawn and colored and lettered back in 2017 as sort of a sample, a pitch to take around to different publishers. And so then when it finally did get picked up toward the end of 2018, then we spent,
by that time, though, I think we'd already started working on issues two,
right,
three.
It got picked up, and then we had them written already, but then we, you know, sent them to the artists and got everybody working on it all. It's a big process.
Yeah, it takes quite a long time to go through the development process on a comic, so.
Well, yeah, and especially because our artist, Walter Giovanni, was working on other books at the time, and so were our colorist and our letterer. They're all, they're working on multiple different comics, and so they had to work on it in between their other projects, and so it was a long process.
It probably took about a year total to get the whole four issues together.
Put together, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, do you in fact have other story ideas for other chapters in this universe to go forward with?
Nothing that we've written out, but I think when you get to the end of this four issue series, you can kind of see where, if we were to tell the next story, what it would be or where it would sort of begin from. It sort of points in a certain direction, I think.
Yeah.
Is that fair to say?
We've just been working on a lot of different things for our other
audio. And I mean, it hasn't come out yet, so we're going to, you know, hopefully it'll have a nice reception, and maybe it'll sell well enough that we can keep making more, but we'll have to see.
Cool. So the first issue of this comes out October 1st, or is that right? October 1st?
2nd, I think. If
second.
That's the Wednesday of that
October
week.
2nd?
I think it's October 2nd. It's always Wednesdays with comics.
Right. And the publisher is
Action Lab,
and it's part of their Danger Zone line, which is their sort of comics for more mature audiences.
Yeah, and it's like, I think it's more because of the violence. There's not
graphic.
It's more like for teenagers,
say it's like teen and up.
Yeah, I'd say teenagers.
Mm. Yeah.
And I'm guessing it'll be available from the usual spots where people can get their comics?
Yes, absolutely. In comic book stores, and it'll be on Comixology. You'll be able to get the digital version of it there if you like.
Yep, and Amazon will have the collected trade.
Yeah, after the four issues. Yeah. Sometime early next year, there should be a collected trade paperback that will be available on Amazon and bookstores.
Yep.
Excellent. I will recommend the story, because it's a compelling tale, allegory sort of, for some things that are going on in our world today, but setting it in space with scientists who are trying to word this in such a way that it's not a spoiler, trying to force the data to fit a particular result. How's that?
I also want to add that it doesn't have a totally down ending, and it has a lot of women, and also women of color, and there's no weird sexual violence, which is so common in steampunk.
Cyberpunk, yeah.
Sorry.
Leans into that. We wanted to avoid
avoid that a lot.
So there's none of that.
Nope, just good old-fashioned fisticuffs.
That's right.
and energy weapons. So that will be available October 2nd. We'll have links for that. But you two are also responsible for some of the awesome fiction that comes out of Pendant Audio. What are you guys up to over there?
Oh, man, so many things.
Yes. But our most recent is Dreamnasium,
Right. It's a collection of adaptations of sci-fi short stories written by Jeffrey Thorne. There's four different stories, each one split into two episodes. And we're right in the middle of airing the first season of that right now.
And Jeffrey Thorne is a wonderful writer.
He is.
He's written on Librarians and Leverage and Black Panther's Quest. So he writes a lot of sci-fi just on his own. So these are some of his stories that he published, and we just fell in love with them. And we were like, you know what? This would make a great audio series. So we took four stories. They're in two parts apiece. And then we have a commentary at the end of each story. So it's like two episodes that are the same story, part one, part two, and then the commentary after that. And they're full cast with sound effects and all of that.
Nice. Yeah, we, he and I chatted back in January, I believe, about his comic book concept, the Battle Books, where it's like three comics enter, one comic gets to continue its storyline, which is the most unique and awesome thing I had ever heard at the time.
I didn't understand how he could do that, because I'm like, what if the ones that you were... your most favorite one you wanted to keep writing didn't make it, then I would be heartbroken. So,
well, he's appealing to what the readers wanted. The one I wanted to win didn't win, so I just have to sit with that and sob. And yeah, it happens. But the audio dramas that Pendant Audio is putting out are completely immersive. Is the best way I can describe that. The attention to detail and the story choices. Where do you pick the stories from, I should say?
Well, so many of them come from really different sources. I mean, Susan and I created or co-created and write on quite a number of them, but then there are several others that are original concepts that were pitched to us by people we worked with, and we just sort of helped produce their shows, and they would write it and direct it themselves.
And then there's also our show Seminar, which is a sci-fi show that has regular episodes, but they're always contributed by outside people.
Right, it's an anthology with open submissions, and so we're always people are always sending us new stuff for consideration for that. So, I mean, it kind of comes from all over the place. But yeah, I mean, we're responsible personally for maybe like half of this show, somewhere. I haven't counted, but something like that. But
yeah, Seminar is very sci-fi. The Kingery is one of our most popular shows.
It is our most popular show and longest running.
Yeah, basically a crime family in space.
That's in its 10th season. We have over 100 episodes.
Yep.
So that's going strong. Yeah, that's our most popular one. It was actually very interesting. In Apple Podcasts, for a long time, they didn't have a category for audio dramas or even audio fiction.
Right.
Everything was just sort of lumped in with performing arts, where it didn't really fit. And so they finally, we've been doing this for 15 years now. We've been making these audio dramas, and they finally changed and made a fiction category podcast. And like the week that that category went live, they have a listing of like the top 60, for whatever reason. I don't know why it's 60, but that's Apple for you. Sci-fi scripted podcast, and we had 8 shows in the top 60, and that was pretty mind-blowing.
Nice. That's one of those things where you say, all that hard work paid off.
Finally, yeah.
Yeah. So
Kingery was up at the top of that one, and so that one, it was up in the top 10, I think. And so, I mean, they shift around a little bit, you know, with whatever metrics Apple decides to use for which goes where, but so they slide around somewhere in there, but they're still up there. And but yeah, what else do we have? We have Active Radio, which was a sci-fi comedy variety show set in a post-apocalypse.
Right. So we have a whole audio season of that show.
It was an audio drama done like as an in-world radio station.
Right, and then we follow that up with 3 episodes of a web series.
With the same cast.
Which has just about the exact same cast.
Yeah.
So there's 3 episodes of that.
And we funded that through Kickstarter, which is cool.
So, well, I recommend that one. I like it a lot.
So
there's a wide variety of shows there. And so there's kind of something for everybody. So, if, you know, one thing's not your cup of tea, you're bound to find something else there. We try to have a good mix of stuff for everybody.
So science fiction, fantasy, that's easy to say, you know, steampunk, cyberpunk, those are your wheelhouse favorite genres.
Yeah,
probably. Most of our stuff has a lot of comedy in it, too. Most of it generally leans on the lighter side, which makes Killswitch a bit of an outlier for us.
It is a little bit. It's not as...
It's not funny.
Yes, it's not funny.
Like a lot of our other stuff is. So.
Yeah.
So when you're selecting stories to produce, what is the primary criteria? Does it have to be funny first and then engaging, or does it just have to capture you the right way?
Well, if it's one of our own projects, it just depends on if it fits the medium best, because not everything will fit in the medium very well. Like Killswitch is a very visual story, and so we didn't think it would work as audio, which is why we went with a comic for that. But with shows that other people pitch us, I think the most important thing that we consider is the reliability of the person pitching it, because we have to know, I mean, putting one of these shows together is a long-term project with revolving monthly deadlines. And if it's something that people can't meet or they're going to flake out on, then, I mean, that's just a liability to put a show like that into production, because you don't want to get the audience excited and get into it and then suddenly it just disappears and people get mad and they get upset. And there's so much content out there these days. You want to try to hold on to the people that like you. So you got to sort of respect their time. I think it's one of the things we've always sort of strived to do is we put up a full release schedule of everything we're planning for like the next year. And we
understand is unusual in podcasting.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We do everything we can to make sure every show, every episode hits those dates so people know when they can find it. So
yeah,
it's a thing we've done since we started. So.
Right. And we, commit a lot of resources to a show. Mm-hmm. So we have producers, we have actors, we have
directors.
And so all of those people who were also committing to it. So it really helps if you have a creator who's like, and I can direct. We're like, hey, now we're really listening, because directing is a lot of work.
Mm-hmm. So with these
things like that, definitely.
Yeah. So when people pitch you a project, since the production schedules are so tight and so scheduled, do they have to have the entire story finished before they send it to you?
No.
But we are moving toward that at times. Well, it depends. We never put out a release schedule without having several months of episodes in the back.
Right, we always...
So that procedure can take over a year until we get to the point where there's three or four episodes
completed,
ready to
go. That we don't miss those release dates, right.
Yeah.
But we're sort of moving to a model now where they don't have to have the whole story done ahead of time, but like we have a sort of Celtic mythology superhero show that we did not write, we just produced, but the writer of it, it's a complete 50 episode series that ended a few years ago, and she wanted to do a follow-up sequel series to it, which we were very excited about because she's so great to work with. So she just sort of pitched the general idea, and we were like, that's cool, why don't you turn that into like a season outline so we can kind of see where things were going. And so she did that. We went over the outline, we had some back and forth with it, and now she's off scripting. And what she's going to do is script the whole season, and then we're going to put it into production, because she's also going to direct it. And writing and directing every single month is really hard to do when you're doing it all at the same time, especially because the writing is like 3 months ahead of where the directing is. You've got to keep two different like continuities in your head at the same time.
Much, yeah.
It's a lot of work. So it'll be a lot easier this way, a lot less pressure on the production team to sort of do it that way. So she's scripting all of those now, and then once the whole season is done, we'll cast any of the new roles, and then we'll get the recording and put it into production, and then it'll be out, like 6 months after that.
Nice. So I'm guessing the hub where everyone can find out about Killswitch and the various audio stories you're putting out is pendantaudio.com. You guys active on social media at all?
We're on the Twitters.
I'm on Twitter at Jeffrey Bridges, very original.
Yep, and I'm Susan L. Bridges on Twitter.
Yeah, you won't find much about Killswitch on the Pendant Audio site, since it's not really affiliated with Pendant. We didn't want to like put ads for it up there, sort of just our thing separate from that.
We definitely should.
Does
we talk about it on Twitter all the time?
Yes, we do.
Does Action Lab have a website?
Oh, yes. It's probably just actionlab.com, but
I gotta look it up. I don't know.
Real quick.
I went there like a little while ago and they didn't have Killswitch up, so I was like, oh well, actionlabcomic.com.
There you go. There we go. So we will be able to direct people to the appropriate locations for both Killswitch and the 212 weekly stories you guys are putting out. Well, Jeffrey, Susan, thank you so much for your time today and sharing your enthusiasm about Killswitch and Pendant Audio.
Well, thank you so much for having us.
Yes,
it was
thank
a delight.
You.
And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Slice of Sci-Fi.
2 million tons of spinning metal, all alone in the night. A world where empires rise and fall. Where dreams are born and die. Where war and hatred are challenged by love and faith. In the third age of mankind, an age plagued by an evil empire that seeks to destroy humanity, it is our last, best hope for peace, for victory, for freedom. It is Babylon 5.
Do I have to put an explicit tag on this show now?
Oh my God, you guys are easy.
We know him so well, and yet we did not see that coming.
What the hell show is this?
It's the Babylon Podcast.
Hi, guys. This is Tom Allison. I play Pree on Killjoys, and you're listening to A Slice of Sci-Fi.
And since production schedules do change, Killswitch is actually out today, October 16th, not October 2nd or later October 9th, but the 16th. It's available Comixology, wherever you get your comics. It should be. Check Action Lab Comics, just to be sure. And the newest production from Pendant Audio will be available October 16th, so go over to their website and check that out. All the links are in the show notes. But if you have any questions or comments on anything, comics related, stage related, sci-fi related, horror related, go ahead and call in. The number is 602-635-6976. Or shoot me an email, summer@sliceofsci-fi.com. You can listen to Slice of Sci-Fi through Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, TuneIn, Player FM, and also iHeartRadio Podcast. You can also leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or on Stitcher. Please give us a rating, give us a review, let people know that you're enjoying the show and maybe they should check it out for themselves. You can follow us on Twitter at Slice of Sci-Fi. You can also follow us on YouTube and Facebook. We're Slice of Sci-Fi over there. And of course, there's the website, sliceofscifi.com. Come on over, leave comments, leave impressions, your own reviews, your own opinions on the reviews that have been done. You can also do that over on the YouTube channel with the videos that Noah and Darren have done and the ones Nerd Soul has done in collaboration with us, too. So go check those out. I'd like to thank everyone who is supporting all these efforts. Slice of Sci-Fi, Babylon Podcast. Yes, there are new episodes of Babylon Podcast. Go check them out. Writers After Dark and a few other sci-fi playgrounds and horror playgrounds. Your support, your donations, your pledges do help keep things up and running around here. So heartfelt thanks to all of you and to those of you who are considering adding your support, the place to go is patreon.com/sliceofsci-fi. Or if you only want to donate every now and then, not commit to a monthly pledge, the link to use is paypal.me/sci-fi summer. For all you listeners out there, there is a secret sauce contest going on. The way to enter that is to head on over to sliceofsci-fi.com, click on the Contact Us link, fill out the form, and yes, you have to use a valid email address or else I can't contact you and send you your prize if you are a winner. Select Have a Different Question for the subject, and in the message box, type in the secret phrase, the babe with the power. After you do that, if you've done it correctly, you should see a list of goodies pop up underneath the form. Select one, select all. It matters not. People will be randomly chosen and first come, first serve. So if you select more than one, that's a good thing. Just saying. I'd also like to throw a shout out to my favorite geek rock band, Sci Fried, for providing the theme music you hear on this program. If you'd like to hear more geek-flavored rock and roll, head on over to their website, sci-fried.com, or search them out on YouTube. I highly recommend the video A Tall Ship, which they... It's an original they created for the 50th anniversary of Star Trek, and it will bring a tear to your eye, just saying. But that'll do it for this episode. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi in a couple of days. Take care.